When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So, Steven at SandCloud got a serious business card. The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.
This podcast is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The content shared is not a substitute for professional medical, mental health, legal, or financial advice. Please consult a qualified professional for personalized guidance or treatment. By listening, you acknowledge that the hosts and guests are not responsible for any decisions or actions you take based on this content.
Feel like a grouch, go beyond the couch. Share your confessions on the Aurora Sessions.
Hello, Aurora Healing Crew. Welcome to the Aurora Sessions Beyond the Couch, where we take the stressors that come up in session and bring them into conversation beyond the couch. This is the space where real talk meets real life.
So today we have something a little bit different. We are having a, what are we calling it, Ariane? A circle?
Round table
discussion with the therapist at Aurora. So today we have Fern, Ariane, and Kimberly, and I will allow them to introduce themselves. So why don't we start with Ariane, who's been helping us with the podcast and was our previous guest about fibroids, and I learned so much from that episode. So can you give us a little bit about who you are and what you do for us?
Thank you. My name is Ariane Fontaine. I am a licensed social worker in New Jersey, and I have been in social work since 2011. And at Aurora, I see couples and adults.
Great. And she also does our social media posts. She edits clips for the podcast. She came up with our outline. So she's really grown her position here at Aurora. Thank you. And next, Fern, do you want to go?
Sure. I'm Fern. I'm an LPC in New Jersey and in Pennsylvania, and I work with clients from the ages of 10 to however old you want to be. And I've been with Aurora for a year and a half and work with a diverse population.
Great. We love Fern. She works so much with codependency people. I find a lot of adults are really craving for some healing, and you really do some great healing work with the adults. So we really appreciate you. And Kimberly, can you give us a little intro of yourself?
Sure. My name is Kimberly Rivera. I'm an LPC in New Jersey and recently Pennsylvania.
Yes.
Yes, very excited about that. I primarily work with teens. I would say the youngest would be 13 and up. And I work with the LGBTQ community. I work with couples. I work with neurodiverse populations. And I think that's it.
You work with a lot. Yes, we are grateful to have someone. You do get a lot of requests for the neurodivergent population and also LGBTQ affirming population. I do get people who say yes, the assumption is that we're all affirming, but not everybody has that on their bio. So that gives them a little extra affirmation that you're there for them. So thank you. All right. So I'm going to hand the mic over to Ariane. She's going to moderate this for us. We have a lot of interesting topics that hopefully other people find interesting as well. And we have no idea what we're going to say and what questions are going to be asked or what will come out of it. So let's go.
So this is maybe a personal one, but I wanted to see everyone's reaction to the concept that people are using ChatGPT as their therapist. So any thoughts, feelings, initial concerns about this AI, which AI is very helpful. It's a very helpful tool. So this is
love it. Yes.
Yeah. Even though apparently it's destroying you know, the water.
We'll We need more information about that.
But yeah, a lot of people are like, oh, I don't need a therapist. I'll just ask chat. So what do you guys think about that?
Who wants to go for anybody can jump in. I could talk forever.
I have opinions.
Yes, go for it.
I have some thoughts about this. Only because I get maybe with like a certain, like certain situations or certain demographics, like maybe wanting to have something that's readily available, like AI, I can see why it's kind of a thing in the first place. But I think, you know, going back to what you were saying earlier, Teresa, about like being affirming can be a very valuable thing in therapy. And, you know, I like to take pride in myself as like an affirming therapist. And I think when using ChatGPT as like a therapist, like I've noticed that the model that they use to respond back to a lot of people is like almost too affirming depending on what they're being presented with. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that could be kind of an issue.
Right. Yes. Well, what comes to mind is recently on the news, there was someone who died by suicide because of ChatGPT, a child. Mm-hmm. So that's scary for sure.
Oh, I think I heard about that actually. Yeah.
That's one of the things that concerns me is the algorithms that are attached to it. So I know that when I was working in high school, computers would have, especially during COVID, something that was called Go Guardian, which would, mm-hmm. if a child was, or a student was looking up safety issues or they were looking up things and trying to get feedback, anything would trigger it, whether it was suicide or something like that. And that Go Guardian would send a message to the principal or vice principal, and immediately that would be addressed. With this, if they're persistently looking up ways to harm themselves, piggybacking on what you're saying, Teresa, then the algorithm is going to start to only show them exactly what they're going to see in social media. So even if they're asking ChatGPT, they're still going to see continuing information. So it pulls away from what we all learned, like our first year in our master's program on helping relations, which is so important in building that therapeutic relationship, which is not what they're going to get with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I almost want to like try it to see what it tells me. You know what I mean? To kind of be like, what are people getting as AI as a therapist? Because
I've never seen people doing that. But they'll present like really intense stuff, like certain delusions or certain things that are like considered challenging. And this goes back to what I was saying about the affirmation, because sometimes, you know, when presented with this kind of information, the response generally is, okay, I see that you're feeling this delusion. Like it almost kind of feeds into the delusion itself and almost validates that response and kind of encourages them. And I feel like as a therapist, there is kind of a hard boundary that is needed to be made, right? That goes back to the human connection where in certain situations, maybe not necessarily the delusion aspect, but I think in a lot of, you know, counseling relationships, it is kind of important to be able to challenge certain thoughts and beliefs, especially if it's like maladaptive or, you know, negative self-talk, et cetera, et cetera. I think ChatGPT is just not equipped to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I also think about like, think of how many years in experience we all have, right?
Yeah.
And each session is so different from the next. And even the same client, each session is so different. And part of why the medical profession finds psychiatry scary is because it's not by the book, that a lot of it is, we have to think on the fly and pivot and pull from like maybe 3 years ago of what we learned or something that comes like maybe more intuitively. And I just don't think like ChatGPT has that capacity either.
Yeah, I think it's taking away like, you know, we can have all the education in the world, but the relationship is really important. And I guess you can build a relationship with chat because when you pay for it, it has memory. So it'll know things about you. But that's not the same as like actual rapport building. And I think so if you're just looking for like, oh, do I have anxiety? What are the symptoms? And yeah, you could Google, you can use chat. But if you need someone to really help you with the coping skills and managing it day to day, chat's going to give you ideas, but you're missing the human touch. And I think I get a little defensive about it because I think it takes away from us and what we put into our clients, what they put into us and our careers. And like, why did I go get a master's degree? If, you know, I could have just waited to AI in 2024, you know?
Isn't there also like some ethical things like breaches of confidentiality if there's data collection, right? So there's not that piece that we create in our environment as clinicians where we protect PHI and we protect personal information and we adhere to HIPAA, where we don't know what that, if their information could be out there. So if a client is seeking information or someone's seeking information, sure, if it's not specific and it's not driven like they're trying to get advice, that's okay if they're just looking up symptomology. But if they're looking for advice, their information could be gathered and who knows who's going to see it.
Right. And also the duty to report, right?
Like exactly.
We have to report to DCPMP and other boards. And if they have plans of hurting a classmate or something or a coworker, we need to report those things.
Duty to warn. Absolutely.
All good points. So the next therapist reacts is probably, I think, the number one pop star, you know, right now is Taylor Swift. I'm personally more of a Beyonce fan, but what I respect about Taylor is that she writes her own music. She plays instruments. And so her new album came out and it's like everywhere and there's a movie and now there's going to be some series on Disney Plus. So just any initial thoughts on this megastar that is Taylor Swift?
So I am a new super fan of Taylor. I've listened to her from Romeo Meets Juliet. I'm not going to sing. But that song I loved. And I saw the movie. I listened to her new album. I'm going to watch the docuseries. I think we could all respect like hard work. Life of a Showgirl. I just like love the like contrast that like this is what people see, but the life of a showgirl is so hard. And I feel like that's mental health, right? We're like masking a lot of the times to get through work, being like a parent or a friend or a partner. And behind it all is like so much other stuff that she's able to pull into words and sing about and so relatable. And that's what I love about her.
That was good. I was not going there.
No, that is like, I'm such a nerd and I'm always like, you know, that's why we're all therapists, right? Like that's what I get from her. It's not about the glitz and the glamour. And yeah, it's not really easy to relate to a billionaire, but she did come from Pennsylvania and talks about, I was talking to my friend, like that she writes about high school, but does she really go to high school? Like, right. And she says she thinks she did and when she went to Nashville, that, like she did have some high school years. And we know it's probably like pumped up because she's still like a musician and stuff. But yeah. What are your thoughts about Miss Taylor?
Well, I can share what I admire about her. I think that she just doesn't talk the talk. She walks the walk. That she is all about bringing her own vulnerability to the public and being okay with that. And, you know, I can say I have not listened to the album, but I have listened to her. Mm-hmm. And she talks about mental health and she talks about how significant and important it is to seek the help that you need. So she's not afraid to share her own personal struggles and bring them out into the public and speak out about it. So I admire that. There's a lot of people that have great messages, but then don't walk the walk. But what I admire about her is that she walks the walk.
That's a good point.
Kimberly, first of all, what genre of music do you like?
I don't know. I don't want to be that person that's like, I listen to everything, but like I kind of do.
Yeah.
And I've heard of Taylor Swift. I don't know if I would consider myself a fan. I feel like objectively, she does have a big fan base. And, you know, there's a lot of work that she's done that I think has proven that she is, you know, deserving of this large fan base that she has. I don't know if I would consider myself one of those. I think I don't know if I really listen to the album as much as like other people. Maybe I've heard like little snippets here and there. And I think I was more of a fan of like her old music. Like there were certain things that I think have brought her into the spotlight, which I think have been memorable for a reason. And I don't know, in contrast to those, I feel like it's very different. Like the tone is different. The, I guess the lyricism that she's usually very praised for, I don't think matches what used to be. Like I think in her previous albums, like there used to be a lot of like double entendres and very like hidden stuff that people can relate to. And I don't know if this album replicates that.
So I'm trying not to be defensive, which is a four horseman.
I'm trying to be like as nice as I can and say, because I just saw you saying you were a fan and I don't want to offend.
I know, it's okay. This is a healthy conversation. So in the movie, I agree. That's what, and I'm not a Taylor fan, so I can't speak about the lyricism from her other albums. But she does have like one song, Ruin the Friendship, on this one about her high school friend. And he ended up passing away in his 20s. I don't want to, but like, I think, I don't know if it's mental health or substance or what, but in a tragic way, like before his time. And the whole Ruin the Friendship is about like, in that time, things felt so heavy. Like, I don't want to ruin the friendship by telling you I like you. He didn't want to ruin the friendship by telling me, like, and then so in the song, she's like, I should have kissed you anyway. I should have kissed him anyway. And because you just don't know. And she says in the movie, who knows? Like, if she did, maybe she wouldn't be where she is now. But it's just things that feel so heavy at the time. Like, in hindsight, it would have been okay if we just took a chance. Mm-hmm. So that's the stuff that I just get all chills about. But yeah, I respect your opinion, Kimberly.
Embrace your Swifty status, Teresa. Stop hiding it. It's okay.
I am honored that you just said I'm Swifty status.
But glowing, Teresa. You're just glowing all about them.
I'm like really obsessed with the albums.
I haven't really gotten into the album. I think I told you it felt a little repetitive to me. And I personally was listening to certain songs. I am a Jason Kelce fan. So by Jason Kelce, Travis Kelce, Taylor Swift, I feel like, you know, I learned more about her. I liked her when she first came out. I agree with you, Kim. I think her music has changed. I think she was more like country before.
Yeah.
I feel like she's more pop. And now I think she plays to the audience. Like, she probably knew, like, Wood was going to be like, oh, people are going to think this about Travis. Let me say this. Like, I do think that. But I think the things that I really appreciate is that she plays her own instruments and that she writes. Mm-hmm. Like, I love the idea, like, ooh, is this going to be in Taylor's next album? Like, who she's dating? Like, I think that really makes you, like, likable and relatable as an artist when you see this high-profile relationship and then it's in their songs and now you're singing the lyrics. I did watch the previous doc where she was struggling to, like, be political and share her thoughts. And, like, that was interesting to watch her go through that and still know that she had to make a stance and knew that maybe like her fan base would be uncomfortable. So Fern, to your point, like she literally followed through and she does what she says she's going to do. I just can't imagine her life. I think about that all the time when I watch her, like you have absolutely no privacy.
Yeah.
The NFL has been taken over by Taylor Swift. Like you can't watch a game with the Kansas City Chiefs and it's not like, where's Taylor? Where's Taylor? Where's Taylor? Like I just, that part, I hope she does have a really good therapist and a really support team. Cause I can't imagine literally not being able to go to Target or the ShopRite or anything.
Right. Without a mom.
She's been targeted outside of the NFL as well.
She has a stalker. Yeah.
Right?
Right.
Because of what she has shared about, like you shared her political beliefs and she walks the walk. And you're right. I hope she has a really good therapist too. I think that's significant. But I think in our writing, kind of get some of the lyrics that I have read, I think that there's definitely, she has somebody that she leans into.
Yeah.
Yes. In Todd's episode, I said, I cannot confirm or deny that because we can't confirm or deny any clients, right? But what she says about like her time is expensive and treat it like you should treat your time as expensive and not everybody should have it. So, or can afford it,
Yeah. And I mean, maybe she is that like deep without being having a therapist, but.
But you're saying that's her therapist gave her that line?
Maybe.
I really hope I have a future songwriter on my case.
Yeah, I know.
All right. We're moving on to pet peeves and myth busters. I think anybody who knows me knows my number one pet peeve is when somebody finds out I'm a therapist or I'm talking to somebody about therapy and they're like, oh, I don't need a therapist. I have my friends. That one like just drives me crazy. So I want to know if there's any ones that you guys that really grind your gears.
Ariana, I might actually piggyback off of your point. I think a pet peeve of mine is when I disclose that I'm a therapist and then the other person like trauma dumps their situation on me, especially when I'm like off the clock and I'm trying to be present as a friend. I'm like, whoa, okay, this is not what I asked for.
Right, right. It's like we should make up. One of my cousins is somewhat in the field and she was like, I just don't tell people. I'm like, oh, so what is my like fake profession? Like, what should I say instead? My friends will always out me. They'll be like, she's a therapist.
Social media developer. I mean, come on.
Okay, I'll leave.
That's right.
But yeah, any pet peeves, Teresa?
I do. So I remember when I first realized it was like, because I think we just go with the flow so much. Like people ask us for, can you find me somebody? Or do you know anybody that can help? Or what do you think about this? Or can I get your professional opinion? And my friend posted, her name is very similar to your spelling, Ariana, and I get you guys confused. But Erin, she said on one of her posts years ago about how she loves everybody, but she needs to set a boundary because when people ask for like a referral, she really takes her time into thinking who would be a good fit for her, someone in her personal life. And she doesn't really have that time to do that for everybody who reaches out. And also, would you ask an attorney, can I have your professional opinion with an attorney friend without paying them. Mm-hmm. So that really made me think like, oh my gosh, it's so true. And this is like, it's a really good boundary. I think once in a while, it's okay. Like if I, you know, ask an esthetician, what moisturizer should I use or something? That's okay. But it's like the freaking flyers, right? Mm-hmm. The ones that we need to set boundaries with. And that's like a pet peeve of mine, or when they don't really value, they're like, oh, a therapist, like you're just talking to people, how's that supposed to solve a problem, you know, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's
what about you, Fern?
Lately it's been like this for a while. You can just fix me, you can help me, and this can happen quickly. And that's a pet peeve. I think it's a myth. And it's also a pet peeve. So it's like, if I go to a therapist, I'm just going to get, everything's going to be fine. Everything's going to be okay. Rather than recognizing that this could be decades of stuff that just starts to come out a little bit at a time. And I think my biggest thing with clients that come into therapy thinking like, oh, this should be 3 months, right? Or this should be 2 months is like, well, why don't we see where we're at in 2 months? Why don't we see how things are going? And let's give, you know, showing yourself grace because there is no quick fix.
Yeah.
And I think that that's really a misconception. Sure, there's solution-focused therapy, where we can address a situation. But even when we're doing that, I find, this is my experience, that underneath that, there's always other stuff because we didn't get to this situation without there being other things. So sometimes it's just, okay, let's just push the pause button and kind of like just breathe a little bit. So I think that's probably one of the biggest myths and a pet peeve as well.
What do you mean I can't fix my problems
just
in 3 seconds?
Sorry,
I was just making a joke. I was like, Fern, what do you mean I can't solve all my problems in like 3 sessions?
I know. Yeah. Aren't you magical? No, I was thinking too, when people ask us for advice, and Angela, I remember saying it so nice, another therapist at Aurora, she said that she learned in grad school, like her professor said, we're not supposed to give advice. So I use that term with my clients, like we're not supposed to ethically give advice. We can try to see what your options are, but we can't really like tell you what to do. We can't.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just like when my clients say, you're helping me. And I had the same situation where I had a professor in my master's program tell me, if you ever say that, you're not a very humble person. You can only help others to help themselves. So yeah. I'll say that to them. I can only help you to help yourself.
Oh, I like that line. That's a good one. Yeah. I think a myth, which you guys have all probably heard me say, or maybe not. There's two. There's this idea that therapy is only for white people. I hate that one because I just hate it. But then my other one is that if I'm talking to someone and they're like, oh, I thought about going to see a therapist. Like, again, I didn't ask. And they're like, but I don't really have like anything. Like, I'm not, nothing's going on, or like, I'm not in crisis, or like this idea that you only go when something's on fire. And like, sometimes I will normalize that and say like, I have clients that show up to session like, I don't know what I want to talk about today. And then they talk the whole time. So like, you don't always need something to be on fire to seek out a therapist, to go to therapy. You don't have to cancel your sessions because you feel like your life is not on fire. Mm-hmm. Things will come up. There will be things. And so I know this has probably come from like, I don't know, TV or even our own like careers of like, there's something has to be wrong. Go see a therapist. But I think normalizing like, go see a therapist because nothing is wrong.
Yeah. I think, well, the insurance industry, too, drives that because you need to meet medical necessity, right? Like for outpatient, for any level of care. So there has to be, but we could always have a goal, too. And it doesn't have to be a crisis. And I say to my clients that these are the best sessions to have because now we have time to get into the nitty gritty because you're not in crisis. Now let's get back to healing, like the past stuff versus crisis intervention.
I would even add that couples are kind of the same way, where a lot of times they'll go into couples therapy when they're like about to separate or they're on their last leg and things are like really rough. And a lot of the times, like I understand why that happens, but that's not always necessary either.
Yeah, that is true. Because sometimes I think having the space just to talk with a professional in the room. And then like, you don't need it because it was bad. You just needed it because like you needed a coach and someone to help you communicate. Yeah.
I love the premarital couples who just want, who love each other. They're like getting ready to get married, but they just want to make sure like that they're talking about everything. And so those are the ones that I love too.
All right. Teresa, throwing it back to you to focus on anxiety.
Okay. So anxiety. Do you guys... that song always pops in my head. Do you know what song I'm talking? Anxiety. That one. So what anxiety looks like in their own practice population? One favorite evidence... Okay. And one technique that you guys use. So with your population, what does anxiety look like? And I'll start with like the Asian population because, and moms, I'll just go with Asians and moms. And I say that because I didn't know that was a niche until I came to private practice. And like my, you know, like fellow Asians found me and said that they just needed somebody to like understand without having to say everything out loud. And or thinking like when my parents smacked me, that was the trauma. Like that was not the trauma. It was like other things that was the trauma. So, but as far as anxiety, I used to think my family was just yelly. And it wasn't until I became a mom that I realized that it was anxiety, because when I get anxious, I'm like a yelly, it's an emergency, like what? Like a sense of urgency, screaming, like, and that is anxiety. And I remember like thinking, oh my gosh, it's May, June, all the kids are going to like be home. And I'm still like have PTSD from COVID when they were home. And I'm like, I just don't want a summer of me screaming at my children. Like, nobody enjoys that. So I was like, oh my gosh, this is what anxiety looks like. And my like family, it wasn't just like anger management, it's like anxiety. So I think as far as techniques, it's one, normalizing that, identifying it for the clients that like it's actually anxiety. You're not an angry, yelly mom. Like, that's a symptom of anxiety. And also, you know, I think self-care and preventative care, make the time for yourself, even if you can't, because moms are the notorious, I don't have time, I'm busy taking care of everybody else. Yeah. So that's my answer. Kim, I'm curious about your answer with your population. What does anxiety look like, and what are the ways that you go about it?
So when thinking about this question, I feel like I kind of branched it out into like two different categories. I feel like one form of anxiety I've noticed, especially in like the neurodiverse population, is that there's a lot of like overstimulation with a lot of things that happen in the day to day. I think, you know, one thing that I often talk about with my clients is that, like, unfortunately, we're in a society that doesn't fit for the neurodiverse population. We're kind of expected to work a certain job for an X amount of time, and we get home and we don't have really as much time to like decompress and do things for ourselves, or we have to prepare for the next day, or maybe school is very overwhelming throughout the day. Like, it's just always something back to back to back, which causes that like overwhelm and burnout. And I think because of that, there's usually more of that response of like lashing out, being angry, saying things we don't mean. And again, it's not necessarily meant to be like aggression. It is more of like, I'm feeling anxious because I have so many things to pay attention to. So one of the big things that I've kind of focused on with my clients is being able to, one, identify what is causing stress, what is causing the anxiety. Are there ways we can implement breaks in between? I think a lot of times when it's kind of ironic, because even though there's a lot of things happening at once, a lot of neurodiverse people thrive off of a routine schedule. So trying to kind of apply it in that way and being like, okay, if I can block in, you know, an hour or 2 hours for like something self-care, something worthwhile, like I can also like pencil in other stuff. I could do it around it, or I can do that around work. And it kind of works out for them as well. And then the other branch I was thinking of was more of like the intellectualizing. I think, you know, this could also go back with neurodiverse populations, where when there's a lot of anxiety or stress, and maybe because there's a lot of like overthinking, trying to process what it is that is giving them that anxiety, that over intellectualizing of like, oh yeah, I know what's going on. Like, I know that I'm anxious because of X, Y, and Z, and I've tried this. And, you know, I've seen therapists that, you know, kind of say, oh, you're very self-aware, you know everything, I don't really know if there's much to do. And I usually take pause in that, because it's not a bad thing to be aware, but I think the over intellectualizing adds to the anxiety of like, I'm scared of the feeling that's coming up right now. I think a lot of times we're not really present with our emotions. A lot of neurodiverse people have, I think, a hard time identifying what the innate feeling is. If it's like a hard feeling, if it's something that we're not, you know, we're not comfortable with, I think that could be overwhelming in itself. So it's almost like a protective factor of like, no, I know what it is. Like, I know. And that kind of gives a sense of calm. So what I try to do in those sessions is try to like be present, allow them to feel the feeling, give them more of a safe space to execute that feeling, and then also offer techniques to like do that on their own time and try to process that, to almost normalize that feeling as like not a scary thing.
Right. I love that. To not be afraid of your feeling, because feelings, just like when kids feel them, it, but you're an adult, like it can be scary.
Yeah. Happy feelings.
Ariane, what are your thoughts?
I'm thinking about Black women, and I think it comes up in attitude, agitation, irritability, which is hard for Black women because it's a stereotype of always being angry and aggressive. Mm-hmm. But when I think about, you know, even clients or people I know personally, it's really like the anxious thoughts that are just manifesting that way, and the anxious feelings. And we don't usually have the language for it. I think we're getting... hope you guys cannot hear the motorcycles. Can you hear them in the background? So annoying. If it's not the bikers, it's the motorcycles. But I think the Black community is getting better with saying I'm, you know, have anxiety or I'm feeling anxious. And so that hopefully that stereotype will transition to that. But yeah, I think it just comes across as like, oh, like she's got a bad attitude or she's angry or she's moody, when really like she has anxiety and she may not be aware of it. She doesn't know it, or she doesn't know how to cope with it, or whatever's happening. But now it's creating this whole situation of just being Black and angry and aggressive.
Mm-hmm. And what are some suggestions, like techniques that you would suggest for that, like they would be open to, you think?
I'm always like pushing meditation. And a lot of people are like, I can't meditate because I can't turn my brain off. And I'm like, that's the point. Like, there's no real, like, you need to sit there and turn your brain off. Like, I meditate and I daydream and then I'm like, oh, let me come back. Because I think it slows the brain down. It's in touch with your mind, your body, and your breathing. And even, like, at work, like, you know, when I worked on a campus, I was just like, I need to go for a walk. And, like, even that is meditative. Like, going for a walk, breathing, like. So if you need to take that time, I'm also huge on like adult coloring. I used to work with children, so I feel like all my children's stuff comes back to my adult stuff. And I also ask them like where you feel the anxiety too. Like I think
I love that.
Getting in touch with like where, how it shows up in your body. When I did work with kids, I would give them like a body outline and give them a crayon and be like, show me on your body outline, like where you feel it. Like, is it in your stomach? Is it your head? Because I also think if you're getting like headaches and you're going to the doctor, thinking that you have like a headache, but really could be how your anxiety is showing up. So also good things to figure out.
I like that. And Fern.
So I really like that you kicked off this, Teresa, with a little bit of your own personal experiences. So I will do the same briefly. And I will definitely lean in more to this when we do our codependency
podcast.
Yeah. But growing up, you know, I grew up in a home where I saw some passive behavior from one parent and narcissistic behavior from another. So there was always this fear of the unknown. And unfortunately, my parents got divorced when I was 13. And all I saw was like a perfect marriage. There was never anything that, there was no arguing, there was no fighting. That doesn't mean that the relationships with the children were different, but between them, that's what I saw. So coming out of that, there was this constant fear of what's going to happen next and trust issues. So my anxiety has always revolved around that and around health issues. So what I find with a lot of my clients that I work with that do fall into that category of having codependent traits and or obsessive and compulsive behaviors, that I see a lot of trying to control situations, fix situations, a lot of rumination, a lot of not being able to get out of their heads. A lot of going to the worst case scenarios and catastrophizing because they don't have and never learned the skills of how to regulate those emotions as children. Or if they are children, they don't have parents that are supporting them in that, being able to do that because they're experiencing the same kind of behaviors. So their safety comes in, well, if I can fix this, it's going to make me feel better. And so we get stuck in this pattern of almost like disassociation and a safety net around like, if I don't immerse myself in it and I pull away from it, or I get stuck in my thoughts, that keeps me safe. So I explain to my clients, most of them, about how the thought goes into the brain, how it goes into the amygdala, and the loop that keeps on going. So I practice with them a lot of thought stopping, a lot of reframing techniques of those anxious thoughts. The five senses is a grounding technique that I use with them a lot. The other thing that we do is we also normalize that some anxiety is healthy. So a little bit of worry is okay. Being a little sweaty is okay. So there's healthy anxiety and there's not healthy anxiety. And I try to help them to see what the difference is
As far as self-care, specifically for my clients have struggled with dependent traits, it really revolves around boundary setting. Mm-hmm. And boundaries are not mm-hmm. for the other person, they're for ourselves. Mm-hmm. Boundaries are to keep ourselves safe. And so for me, that might look like no is a sentence. I'm allowed to say no. Or if I don't want to be that, and I also want to point out that like having boundaries is not being selfish. It's being selfless. Mm-hmm. It really is being selfless. And saying, I love you, let me get back to you, not feeling like I have to respond and give an answer right away.
Yeah.
Or I'm unable to do that at this time, unfortunately. And those are three different ways of saying no.
Yeah.
Right? So it's just pausing. Sometimes we feel like, and I've seen with my clients, that we have to respond right away. We have to give an answer. We have to fix this right away because we're always in a trauma response mode. So we're always in fight, flight, freeze, or fawn.
Mm-hmm. Can't you listen to Fern forever? This is our interview was. I was just like, so soothing. Like, keep talking to me.
Yeah, I was like, no is a sentence. Yes.
You remember our interview. Like, yes, you're right.
I almost felt like
Thank
the client
you,
for
Fern.
A second. Yeah, I was like, is she talking to me, my inner child?
Yeah, I know. We all
embarrassing someone
Fern.
On their first podcast.
Yeah. Oh, but that is true. Like that you mentioned good anxiety, because I have said that to clients, like, yeah, anxiety is your friend. They're like, what? So I think that's also good to know. Like, you know, we always talk about anxiety in a negative way, but like, I use my example of like, I get flight anxiety, but that's not a bad thing. Like it's letting me know, like, you're in a position, you're uncomfortable, you're out of control. The movement makes you uncomfortable, but then I know how to like cope and calm myself down, because you know I'm still going to get in a flight and travel somewhere. So I use that as like, it's not a bad thing that I feel sweaty as soon as I step on the plane. Like, it doesn't mean I should run mm-hmm. off, but it's letting me know like I'm uncomfortable and here's what I should do. So yeah, correct. Thank you for sharing that.
Just like so different. I don't know why my brain went here, but like I was recently telling a client that because they were upset that their dog growled. And I said, well, the growling is a great thing because that's a warning. That's a setting a boundary, because if they just bit right away, you wouldn't want that. The growling is a good thing. Mm-hmm. So that's what the sweating reminded me of. It's like telling us, okay, let's just be aware of what's going on. Yeah. Okay. So Ariane, what do you have to ask us about wellness and self-care?
All right, we're coming to the end, and I love talking about self-care, and so I could share my self-care tip, but I also want you guys to share what you do to kind of maintain. It's a lot. It's heavy. You're holding in the secrets of your clients and your own stuff, and so how do you replenish and pour back into yourself? After this, I'm going to get my nails done. That is a non-negotiable for me. I still am a nail biter, and so I have to, like, put time into getting my nails done, and it's like fun. Like, I have my own nail tech, and she's like, what color we're doing today, what design we're doing today. It's like part of this like excitement. And some people are like, I can't sit in the nail salon. And I'm like, yeah, like it could be annoying to be there for like an hour and a half or so, but it's my hour and a half. And it's like, because I know her, she's not asking me a whole bunch of, you know, questions. And like, it's fun, it's creative, and it kind of speaks to me. So wondering, like, Kim, you're nodding. Like, is that your thing too?
Oh, yeah. I get the acrylics. I've had the acrylics literally since high school, if I'm being completely honest.
Oh,
yeah,
my gosh.
I'm kind of used to having the longer nails. And same reason, I'm like a chronic nail picker. Mm-hmm. So because of that, I figured if I had them long enough and I, you know, get these cute little designs, like I'm not gonna destroy that. Like, I want to preserve that as much as I can. Yeah. And I've been with my nail tech, oh my gosh, years. For years. So it's like a really nice space to be able to like unwind. So I agree with that, Ariane. I guess that's why I was like nodding. I was like, yes.
It's like going to see your therapist, like, you know, someone who knows you and it's comfortable.
Yeah.
I think, you know, being anxious in a nail salon is because, like, maybe you don't know the person, they're going to start over fresh. But I'm like, I walk in like, hey, girl. Yeah. Is that your self-care, or you do something else, Kim?
I do. Oh, my gosh. I do a lot of things. Like, you know, I get my hair done. I get my nails done. Right now, I really need to get my lashes done, but I get my lashes done, too. Other stuff. Lately, I've been trying to, like, get my body moving throughout the week, because I think, you know, being a therapist, I feel like for the longest time, I've just kind of been sitting and sometimes that also takes a toll when we're taking on like so much mental energy. So I think, you know, what I try to do to move my body is I'll do like spin class weekly. I started doing Pilates not too long ago. So that's been like really fun. Great. Yeah.
Good for you. Mm-hmm. Fern, what do you do? Well, I know what you do, but tell everybody what you do.
I also go for a manicure, but I'm unlike the acrylics. I went to Europe when I was in my early 20s because I was a buyer, and I traveled to Italy and to London, and I noticed that the women there had very short, clean nails, and I loved that. So ever since then, except for my wedding, I have short, just very groomed, clear nail polish, and I get that done. Yesterday, I did have a clean pedicure done because it's winter and I let them breathe through the winter. But I walked this morning at 7:30. I did a mile and a half.
Wow.
With my Aurora sweatshirt on, and that's on every morning, but I do it 5 days a week, or I try to do it 5 days a week before I jump into my sessions. But my self-care really is setting those boundaries, because going back to back every day, basically with only a little bit of a break and taking all that in, I need to set boundaries around, am I going to talk on the phone to anybody tonight? Mm-hmm. Or am I just going to text them back if somebody calls me and just say, I just need some space today. Can I get back to you? Is this an emergency? You know, really asking those questions. I'm not as good about it because I'll scroll on my phone, like when I'm watching Netflix, like I'll get into a series, like I'm so excited because there's some next season series coming out on Netflix. So I do that at night when I'm done with my clients. So, and my self-care is, again, like that's setting boundaries. I think for me, that's really important, but I'm not really good at it with some things. Mm-hmm. Like I'll be scrolling, posting stuff to, so you know, to for
I
work.
I see you. Yes.
You do.
I do.
And I see you too.
I know. Yeah, same. Yeah.
I gave props to you, Ari, on the other night because Teresa posted something and I commented on it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I think I've been talking and boasting about yoga for the last year, so everybody knows I love my yoga. That really has been like life changing, like because it really, like I'm so not good at sitting and not doing anything. So like I don't like going to, like I have my hair appointment later, and this is after I canceled the first one, so I really have to go, but I don't like it. I avoid it. I don't like getting my nails done for that reason, but so I need to work on it. But yoga, I am forced to be in the room without my phone and just concentrate on not dying, like during that hour. So, and I really do love it. Another thing I'm trying to do, like you said, Fern, is to set boundaries with like my laptop, because my laptop, I could like, I go on it and I'm constantly just doing all stuff. Like there's no boundary anymore between work and life. Mm-hmm. So I need to, and he's probably going to hear this, but my husband does not care because he likes it when I'm preoccupied and not obsessing over him. But the other week he's like, don't you ever get sick of your laptop? And I was like, for him to like say something, even just that, I was like, oh my gosh, like I'm really on my laptop so much. So I'm like, I'm really trying to make an effort to just shut it, put my phone somewhere when we're watching something, just watch like something. Yeah. So I'm working on that.
Be present.
Yeah.
That's good. That's really good. You're better than me. That's better than me.
It's a work in progress. Yeah. What else do we have? Are we at the end, Ariane?
We're at the end. This was fun.
This was fun.
It was fun. I think they were great topics.
Yes. Yeah. Let's do it again. Thank you guys so much for joining. And I can't wait for us to continue to do this every once in a while with fresh new topics, maybe Taylor's on tour announcement or whatever. I'm kidding.
More Taylor's
because I need to be a fan, huh?
The Swiftie podcast. Kidding.
Otherwise, have a wonderful day, and we'll talk soon. Thank you, everybody.
Have a great time having your nails done, ladies, and Teresa, your hair.
Thank you.
Try to stay in the moment.
Exactly.
Yes. Oh, gosh.
In the moment.
Yeah, okay.
And I'm going to Trader Joe's.
Good. All right. See you guys.
Before we go, Aurora Healing Crew, take a deep breath like you're soaking in sunlight. Warm, steady, grounding. As you move through your day, check in with your gut. Notice how you feel around others. Your energy is precious. Protect it so you have the strength and light to do what really matters to you. Because life is hard, and we're getting through it together. Thank you for listening to the Aurora Sessions Beyond the Couch. Visit our website at aurorasuncounseling.com to learn more. You can find us on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, LinkedIn, and YouTube. Just search Aurora Sun Counseling. Got questions or topics you'd love to hear us cover? Email us at info@aurorasuncounseling.com or drop a comment. We'd love to hear from you.